$20,000 off, 0% APR for 72 months. It is the 2018 model clearance event at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Our great friends at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they present the Ira Kaufman podcast and all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com. We have been out to both dealerships. They are fantastic. Of course, the Ed Morse name means more than 70 years of service and commitment to the community across Florida. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they have the new XT4, the beautiful crossover, is available. 0.9% APR for qualified buyers. Get all the details at edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. And they have a long list of special offers. It's right there on the homepage of the website. You will be impressed. And of course, the signature showroom at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. General Manager Brian Danahy has been on our show. He's a great friend of the podcast and Bucks fans everywhere. And the offers are fantastic. Get to edmorsecadillactampa.com. We thank Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa for all of their support. You should support them. And here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hello, Bucks fans. Welcome to the latest edition of the Ira Kaufman Podcast, featuring the one and only, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the king of Newport, Richie, the custodian of Canton, the one and only, Ira Kaufman. And we got Ira here today, of course. I'm Lee DeCamper at JoeBucksFan.com. And unfortunately, Steve is incapacitated this Sunday evening, this brutal Sunday evening.
So was the Buck offense for the second half.
And you darn right I was incapacitated. And quite possibly, we may have seen the second last home game of the Dirk Cutter era. Right now, I don't know how Dirk Cutter survives. I was starting to convince myself that he was going to come back for another year. But after this laying of an egg by the offense, and there was a myriad of problems, this may have been it for Dirk.
Lee, the morning broke dark and gloomy. The skies cleared with a nice 14-3 lead. The Saints were dead in the water. They were doing absolutely nothing. They couldn't run the ball. 3 yards on the ground in the first half. 9 carries. That's whatever the math is.
Wait a minute. I think you're the math whiz.
I am the math whiz. You know what? It's less than a half a yard a carry. That's what it is. Less than a half a yard. So 14-3 going into halftime. Bucks force a turnover early third quarter. You figure they're going to get at least 3 out of it. If Santos could make a damn field goal. And it turns out they don't get anything out of it. That was a warning sign. That was bleak right there. But nobody expected a block punt from a third string quarterback. I didn't say cornerback. I said quarterback who breaks through. And I called it in my column Sunday. When you go up the middle to block a punt, that's a cardinal sin. In Pop Warner, it's rule one. You don't allow it. If a guy beats you around the side, you say, hey, nice play, or whatever. And then the game totally changed. You could sense it. Then the rain started coming. That didn't help anything. Add it all up, any playoff aspirations, which they had a 5% chance. Now it's zero, you know, basically. That's done. Now they got to rely on professional pride. They're going on a road for 2 weeks where they're not any good, you know, other than winning the week one against the Saints. I don't believe they've won another road game this season. They had a chance to go 5-2 at home. They had a chance to sweep one of the NFL's premier teams. And it looked like they were going to do just that. Lee, I think you'd agree with me. Mark Duffner and his group have nothing to be ashamed of.
Oh, not at all.
Absolutely nothing. And you could tell from Cutter's face in the postgame, Lee, the offense is his baby. He knows where the blame lies. Besides the blocked punt, the offense did absolutely nothing in the second half, and the defense wore down.
When you first started, I didn't know if you were reciting a Kipling poem or a Norman Chadley.
Oh, boy. I think it was a Larry David monologue from Seinfeld or something.
I don't know. Dark and gloomy.
Dark and gloomy. Sounds like Edgar Allan Poe with the Raven. You know, it was a rough drive in.
Nevermore.
Nevermore. Look, it was a tough drive in. I'm just glad I didn't hydroplane get into the stadium.
Yeah.
Then I did my, Fox tailgate show, which they don't ask me to pick a Bucks game, thank God.
But, where did they have that set up? You were worried about you're going to get rained on.
Well, we were going to normally do it on the field at 10:30 in the morning. And then at 8 o'clock, the host, Scott Smith, who does a nice job there, pulled an audible and said, gentlemen, we're going in the studio.
Oh.
And I think it was the right call. Not so much the rain. They were going to have a little canopy over us. I think the wind would have screwed us up. Can you see me with rain all messing up my beautiful coiffure over there, my Warren Beatty hair over there? So anyway, we did it in the studio, and then I got over here. 14-3, Lee. 14-3 at home. You're supposed to win those games.
I don't know if you did, but I asked a couple of the defenders, Lavonnie David being one of them. You know, I asked him, like, what happened in the second half? Did you just get worn down? Because obviously the ball control, the time of possession had flipped. First half, I think you put something out on Twitter that you were saying the Bucks just dominated time of possession, and that completely flipped in the second half. And I think it was reasonable to believe they got worn down. And I mean, they're not playing the Pee Wee team. We were playing one of the elite offensive units in the NFL, and they did a damn good job on them. Now, you mentioned professional pride earlier. I talked to Ryan Smith. He said, no, we didn't get worn down. Lavonnie David said
the same
thing.
They don't want to acknowledge that.
No, they do not.
They don't make excuses, Lee. Yeah. That's one good thing about this locker room. They don't make excuses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't like that because to them it's like an excuse. Lavonnie, Ryan Smith, they immediately, no, we didn't get worn down. And I understand the professional pride, as you mentioned, but I think it's reasonable to believe that they did. But it wasn't just that the offense was shut down. It's like, and I wrote this, these very words, all the ugly warts came out. I've never been one to always whine about the offensive line. Phil Simms once said there are two things, two crutches fans always use. One is offensive line. Two is play calling. He goes, you hear that? He says, I don't care what fan base it is. If you listen to a local sports morning radio show or a sports radio show the day after a game, no matter what city it is, people complain about the offensive line. People complain about the play calling. So I'm not one to always whine about the offensive line. They were terrible today.
Yes.
Even Dirk Cutter admitted. He's like, I think it was Tom Jones asked him to give a critique about Jameis. And he's like, well, Jameis wasn't that sharp. He didn't have turnovers. But you can't expect a guy to perform well when he gets hit so many times. And he said, you can't have that many hits. Jameis had 10 hits.
4 sacks. Now, look, having said that, Lee, and you make a strong point about the O-line, and I want to make another point about that in a minute, I'm not letting Winston off the hook. I thought he had a bad game. Not a terrible game. I thought he had a bad game.
He was off. No
question.
He did
nothing in the second half. I mean, nothing.
He did nothing in the second half. The whole offense did nothing. Guys, receivers couldn't get separation. Offensive line. It wasn't just the blocking. It was the penalties. Poor execution, poor discipline.
And a lot of the penalties weren't even accepted by the Saints. Could have been worse.
Exactly.
Look, I'm a big believer, and you've heard me say this again, Lee. As long as I've been watching football, nothing's going to change my mind. And as an old Chiefs fan, as you know, I don't have to go back to the AFL days. I go back to the early 2000s. The Chiefs' offensive line had Willie Rofe at left tackle. They had Will Shields at left guard or right guard. They had a couple other studs up front. Trent Green was the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He's not Johnny Unitas.
No.
That offense did anything it wanted.
With Dick Vermeil, right?
With Dick Vermeil. They had a good running back.
Priest Holmes.
The receivers were average. But they had Tony Gonzalez, so he's a Hall of Famer. That's two Hall of Fame offensive linemen. And the other guys were pretty darn good up front. And my point is, Lee, I watched that team. They could do anything they wanted on offense. And they went and the Colts came in for a playoff game at Kansas City.
A cold Saturday afternoon, right?
I went to that game. The trip sent me. It was like 2001 season, something like
was
that.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't the Bucs Super Bowl season. The Colts with Manning. And a real good Colts team with Edgerrin James and Reggie Wayne and those guys. Zero punts in the game.
Really?
Zero. And the Colts won, like 34-31 because the Chiefs made one turnover. Mm. And that was the difference because the Colts got one extra possession. Nobody could stop each other. And, Manning threw for his 400 yards and Green threw for his 350. So my point is, Lee, and Trent Green's never going to be mistaken for Drew Brees.
No.
Now, he was good. But when you have a dominant offensive line, and the Bucs have never had one. They've never had one. Lee, they don't have it. And I'm getting a little tired of people making excuses for the running game and the inconsistencies. Cutter today said it was fine. You look at the final
which
stats.
Is a crock.
They don't look that bad. But Winston is the leading rusher again.
Exactly.
And that's not what you want, Lee. And Peyton Barber gets everything that's there. And you know what? There ain't much there.
You know, like you said, for the second week in a row, your quarterback was your leading rusher. It's not like Jameis is Michael Vick.
He's not Lamar Jackson.
He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not Marcus Mariota. He's not Kyler Murray for your college football fans. I don't know if you ever got to see him yet. He won the Heisman Trophy. Phenomenal quarterback. I mean, he runs as well as he passes. Phenomenal. He would be a first-round pick if he wasn't 5'9".
Winston's not of that.
Not even close. Not even close. I mean, Murray has wheels like you won't believe. He's not even close. He's not of that ilk, as you would say. That magnifies you got a problem with the running game. And on top of that, and this stuck in my mind, and I wrote about it on JoeBucksFan.com Sunday evening, when Peyton Barber got hurt, a fresh second-round draft pick ready to go into the game, and who did Cutter choose in a game that he knows he has to have for his career? He turns to Jacques Rogers, not the second-round pick. That, to me, all kinds of
love. Can you blame him? Lee, can you blame him in a way?
He's never done that, but I think that just shows you how far down the totem pole this coaching staff thinks of Ronald Jones when they went to Jacques Rogers to try to save their careers.
Lee, let's touch on a couple of positives. You know, there were a few.
The defense.
I'm going to start with Cameron Brate. You'll agree with me 1,000%. When Cameron Brate drops a football, you're like doing a double take. Yeah, he doesn't drop anything. And he knows how to get open in the red zone. And there's a reason that he's Winston's go-to guy in the red zone. He's good at it.
He's dependable.
Boy, are they set at tight end, because O.J. Howard was having a hell of a year. Mm-hmm. He made a lot of strides this year, Howard. And they're complimentary. You know, Brate doesn't stretch the defense like Howard. He's never going to have a 75-yard touchdown like O.J. Howard. But he's damn dangerous. And by the way, he's got 6 touchdowns. He leads the team in touchdowns.
As a backup.
Cameron Brate, as a backup, leads the Bucs with touchdowns. I thought Taylor, at middle linebacker, played a very nice game. He had the interception off that attempted screen pass. Nobody picks off Breeze on a screen pass.
I know.
He read the play very well.
Perfectly.
Yeah. He also made a couple of big hits in the game. So I think Coach Duffner is going to be very happy with Taylor's performance.
Part of Taylor's interception, part of it was caused by Curry and JPP. Curry was right in Breeze's face. JPP was in like a step away, 2 steps away from drilling him. As you always say, pass rush, you know, that can force a quarterback into things.
And your guy Nassib showed up. He made a couple of nice plays.
Yeah.
But Pierre Paul's always going to be there. He's the... I think he's been the best player on this team this season, playing through injuries and kind of setting the tone for everybody. If this guy can play with everything he's going through, I got to suck it up. You hear that, Deshaun? Are we going to see Deshaun Jackson next week, Lee? If you're a betting man.
No. It almost smells like somebody's involved in Operation Shutdown.
I'd be surprised if he comes back for a 5-8 football team.
I have to admit what I'm going to say here. I have yet to confirm it. Person I trust texted me this. He heard it on the radio. Like I said, I trust the man, so I'm going to run with this. I haven't used it on JoeBucksFan.com. I'll go ahead and say it on a podcast. He claims Dave Moore had a veiled shot at Deshaun Jackson in the post-game, Buccaneers post-game radio show. He claims Dave Moore said something to the effect of...
And he's normally very careful, Dave Moore.
Yes.
Very careful.
He's an employee of the Bucs, so he's not going to, you know, go out of his way to go after someone. Guarded, I guess is a better word. Apparently, he said this time of year, you have guys with made-up injuries. They find an injury to get out of playing.
He's right.
And boy, that sounded like Deshaun Jackson.
All of a sudden, they get thrown on IR.
Yeah.
You go, wait a minute. This guy's on IR all of a sudden? It happens all the time. Not just the Bucs, Lee. For teams that are out of the playoff chase, happens all the time. What happened to your man Santos, Lee? What's going on? 3 for 3 entering the game, 11 for 11 on his point afters. He hits the right upright, and that second one never had a chance.
Yeah.
Boy, was that wide right.
Well, you know what? The special teams were so terrible today.
Yes.
The special teams may have lost the game for them. And what I mean by that is the block punt obviously set up the Saints with a touchdown, their first touchdown of the game. 2 missed field goals. Well, that's a touchdown.
Yes.
The Bucs lost by 2 scores. Right there was your game.
I can't argue with you.
As bad as the offense was in the second half, there was your game, the special teams.
I think Cutter was kind of shocked. Not that Santos missed a field goal or two, but I think he was shocked how inept the offense was in the second half.
Yeah.
That really hurt him, you could tell, when he went to the podium. That's his baby. You know, we asked the players, did the Saints change up a lot of things? We asked Jameis, did the Saints... No, the answer is no. We didn't execute. I thought Lattimore did a nice job on Mike Evans. You know, he caught an early 36-yarder. But after that, Evans was relatively quiet.
He vanished.
And Lattimore's good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's done good.
And I'm not knocking Evans. Yeah, exactly. Lattimore's good. I'm not knocking Evans, but he vanished. He absolutely disappeared because he was so well covered. Now, I was talking right after you spoke with him. You know, I saw you speaking with him, and I spoke with Adam Humphries. And I said, what happened in the second half? I said, you guys couldn't get separation. I said, I'm not knocking you. I'm just
saying. They contested every pass.
Yes, they did. You know, again, Jameis was not on his top of his game. I'm not making excuses. So I asked Adam about that. He said they were changing up their looks where they being the receivers, Bucs receivers, thought the Saints were going to be in a certain type of coverage. But they weren't. Disguised their looks. They disguised their looks. That's what Adam Humphries said.
Very nice.
They disguised their looks. So they were thinking A or B, and it was turning out to be C and D. Therefore, they weren't getting separation. So I thought that was interesting thing. You know, and Humphries gave all the credit to the Saints. And that shows you that's a pro.
You know, Lee, looking at the big picture, and it's a sorry-looking picture.
Yeah.
If we're a betting man, it looks like the Bucs are going to finish 6-10. I mean, that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be underdogs in Baltimore. The Ravens have a very good defense. Just ask Pat Mahomes. I mean, they held the Chiefs in check on the road and lost a tough game in overtime. Dallas is playing well, you know, and the Bucs don't play well on the road, as we know that. The Falcons look like they've packed it in. They do. They look have the look of it. And Arthur Blank can't be happy about this. I don't know if Quinn's in trouble, but there's a lot of guys in trouble, like Jay Gruden after today. They were losing 40-0
at home. But they've got so many injuries.
They have so many. And Alex Smith, they've gone downhill since Smith. So, Lee, my point is, if the Bucs do finish 6-10, and I'll say it again for the 12th time on this glorious podcast, that will leave your man, Jason Light, with the same damn record as Mark Dominic after 5 years, 28-52. I'm going to start calling him Jason 28-52 Light, like I used to do to Dominic. Fair's fair.
Fair's fair.
And that'll mean that Cutter follows a 5-11 with a 6-10. It's going to be very difficult for Cutter to look the Glazers in the eye and make a strong case. Lee, 6-10, 6-10, after a 2-0 start with a backup quarterback, boy, that's a tough argument to win.
Well, here's another one for you. The Bucs tied a franchise record today when Jameis connected with Cam Brate, 31 touchdowns. I can't remember if that's tied a record or set a new record.
That's not even a lot of touchdowns in terms of a 40-year franchise.
Yes, yeah.
You know.
Well, that just goes to show what kind of
the Saints have 50. Before today, they had 50.
Man.
Yeah.
So the 31 is either tied or it set a record for most touchdowns in a season. So your team set a record for most touchdowns in a season, yet you're going to have a losing record again. I think second or third, and I'm going off the top of my head, I apologize, second or third most touchdowns in Bucs history was 2 years ago, 2016. The fifth most was 2017, all under
Cutter. So that's three under Cutter.
Yet, with the exception of his first season, and that was only by one game. Remember, they barely beat the Panthers that last game of the season. Otherwise, they would have been 500. You know, you're losing records. So you're setting offensive records for your franchise, yet the team's losing.
And also,
that's not good.
Lee, we are compelled to say this. Total yardage is very nice, but the more important category, and it's far more important, is scoring.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bucs aren't terrible. They may be 10th in the league or whatever, but the Saints came in averaging 35 points, and the Bucs are averaging, you know, 25, 26. I mean, it's a big difference.
Yeah.
You average 35 points. You win a lot of games when even your defense isn't playing well. Look, I'm not going to knock Dirk Cutter as an offensive play caller or as putting, and Light's done a good job of putting some weapons together. I can't knock that. And as Cutter keeps talking about, we're a pass-first team. Why does he say that? Well, he
says
for two reasons. One, they got damn good weapons. Mm-hmm. And two, they got no running game.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
No running game. Well, the thing I always go back with Cutter, and to me, which is the tipping point. I don't think you could come up with a justifiable...
Assuming they end at 6-10.
Yeah, yeah. If they end at 6-10, I don't think you could justify any type of reasonable argument that he should be kept. And I like Dirk. I don't want to see Dirk fired. Like you, I think he's a good offensive coach. Unlike other coaches, I didn't have any faith in him. I have some faith in Dirk, although, you know, 6-10. But to me, the tipping point. Whenever I come up with an argument, if I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, this is why you should keep Dirk. Whenever I say that, I always come back to this. Yeah, but. And this is the yeah,
but. What's your yeah, but?
Mike Smith. I mean, today was glaring evidence that Mike Smith torpedoed this team. Probably last year, certainly this year. There's no doubt about it. Ira, Duffner's not playing with a full deck of cards.
Do you fault Cutter for not replacing him before the season?
Yes.
Or at the bye week?
Season. If Duffner was running things, and I'm not, you know, there's other people in our colleagues that don't like Duffner. I said, well, the only time he was ever defensive coordinator before, he was at Cincinnati. He had the 32nd ranked defense. Well, I don't think that defense had the talent the Bucs had. But there's no question that all the injuries the Bucs have had to the secondary and to linebackers, and for Duffner to make this, you hold the Saints to 3 points in the first half, the Saints with Andrew Adams is working at Best Buy.
And the Saints are relatively healthy.
They're dangerous, my gosh. And like I say, Andrew Adams was at Best Buy working, for all I know, in September. And you're winning with that guy? Or have put together a decent defense?
The defense is played with a lot more energy. A lot more enthusiasm.
And that just tells me that, number one, I don't care what our colleague says about Duffner. Duffner at least has an idea what he's doing. I'm not saying he's the next, not Bum Phillips.
Wade Phillips,
yeah.
So you're saying Smith had to go before the season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was on, you know as well as I do, they were hell-bent to set 99-year NFL records for most points allowed, among other categories. They were atrocious, and that was on top of last year. He had a 32nd-ranked defense, and Jason Light went out and added players.
You think the 48-40 fact that they won the game kind of camouflaged
absolutely
the fact that they had problems?
Absolutely. I'll give you a good story. I don't know if I told you this before or not, but it was at New Orleans, and you and I were both there. That was one of your rare Joe Bucs fan road trips.
It was a great trip.
Oh, yeah. Among other, yeah, exactly. But after the game, there was a person in the front office, Bucs front office.
Number one of your unidentified sources at the Kemper?
I'll tell you who it is after this podcast, because this was not told to me for public consumption. I'll tell you who it is after this podcast. But it was somebody in the front office, and he came up to me. He bouncing, man. He's light on his feet. He's bouncing. After the game in the locker room, he sees me. He comes up bouncing to me, big old smile on his face. He goes, what are you going to write negative about this game?
Oh.
And my response was, oh, the defense. He goes, you're going to start. And he got all indignant. I said, no. I'll wait until tomorrow. I said, today we'll celebrate the win.
That's
it's a great
right.
win.
That's
but
right.
tomorrow, I can't ignore the defense.
And then you thought, when you had a day to think about it, you and I both came with the same question. Is this sustainable?
Yeah.
Is it sustainable? Mm-hmm. Can you win shootouts every week? Well, it turns out you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, especially when you lose the turnover battle week after week.
Well, you notice in Dirk Cutter's post-game remarks, he almost complimented Jameis for no turnovers. Now, there was the throwaway pick final seconds
right.
of the game.
Right.
But, you know, Cutter said, hey, Jameis, another game, no turnovers. We should have won. We won the turnover battle.
By the way, have you noticed, Lee, that when he does run, and he's running a lot now, he's really tucking the ball.
Yeah.
He's not holding it out like that loaf of bread.
Exactly.
That's been drilled into him.
Well, I noticed that on one of his runs toward the left sideline early in the game, he had the ball in his left hand, which is what they teach you in elementary school when you play football. You're going to the left sideline, but the ball in the left hand, you know, to guard,
that's
protect
right.
it.
That's right.
And I've never seen that before. And last week I noticed, I wasn't looking for it this game. When he ran into traffic, he covered up the ball with both hands, with both arms. I noticed that.
You know, at least sometimes it's the way that a game goes that really colors your thinking. In other words, we all picked the Saints to win. We all said that the Saints have a better team,
mm-hmm.
which they do. They're 11-2. I mean, there's no illusion about it. They lost a tough game to Dallas.
But they've always lost a couple games, yeah.
You know, yeah. You win 10 in a row in the NFL, you're a pretty good
team. That's impressive.
You know, I saw Houston's winning streak ended. But look, the Saints are...
Nine games, right?
Yeah, the Saints are an elite team. Two straight division titles. Mm-hmm. In a division that's famous for flipping the first place team. To win two in a row is an accomplishment. But the way the game emerges and develops, Lee, colors our thinking in terms of, well, if I would have told you that they were up 14-3 at the half and the Saints were doing absolutely nothing, then all of a sudden you say, well, wait a minute, the Bucs should win that game at home.
With their offense?
So it's the way, you know, they weren't beaten to a pulp from the kickoff. Any far from it. Without the block punt, Lee, I don't know if they lose this game. Everybody I talked to in the locker room said, a block punt more than any other, more than a fumble or an interception. It's the nature of the block punt, because you don't see it that often, that magnifies the impact. And boy, am I exaggerating, Lee, to feel the juice drain out of the stadium? And that's even before the Saints cashed in with the touchdown. It was a bad feeling.
People, here we go. It was that kind of thing. You know what Brake told me he thought the turning point of the game was? Although he admitted the block punt was significant.
Not adding any points on the turnover? The early third quarter?
In the third quarter. He said, because we score there, we win the game. That's his exact words.
Maybe even a field goal. Yeah. You know, makes it 17-3. But they came away with zero.
Mm-hmm. Brake, by the way, had a good one-liner, I thought. And fans, this might irritate fans. Brake obviously was bummed out about the loss, clearly. But he's obviously a very intelligent guy, and he tries to put things in perspective. He treats us respectfully. You know, some guys are so hacked off, they'll snap at us. Brake's not that way. He'll talk to you. He may not want to talk to you, but, you know, he tries to be professional about it. But Jenna went up to him, and Jenna's like, well, how you doing? You know how Jenna is. Jenna's got empathy. Jenna Lane of ESPN, that is. And Jenna asks Brake, well, how you doing? And Brake looks at her like, what do you mean, how am I doing? We talk about spiritually, financially, and whoa, professionally. Whoa. And I thought that was great. Spiritually.
Lee, you know, I'm sure you had the same vibes as I did when we got out of that locker room. Opportunity lost. That's how you put a title on this book, this chapter.
Absolutely.
Opportunity
perfect.
Lost.
That's a perfect. You could say that with Cutter. You could say that with the players. Everybody we saw, everybody we talked to, that summed it up. Opportunity lost.
Lee,
it was there.
Lee, I mean, we're not exaggerating here. If they would have got to 6-7, having swept the Saints, you know, this could have been a very interesting December.
Beyond interesting. Playoffs were still in
they were in play.
Yeah.
They were in play. Instead, you know, we're stuck with 5-8, and the Cutter meter is not going to be very kind this week. What day are you guys putting that on?
The confidence bowl?
The confidence.
Steve generally does it on Wednesdays.
Wednesdays. It's not going to be very good.
No, it's not going to be. You know, you said something a little bit earlier, almost in passing, that I thought it really jumped out at me. You sort of referenced how the way the schedule works in the NFL, it's almost like, you know, teams go from worst to first every couple of years.
That's what makes the NFL so interesting.
This league is built for rotten teams to have quick turnarounds in 2 or 3 years. Yet here the Bucs are, no playoffs
year
for
11,
10 years.
Year 11.
How awful for the fans. A league that's built for teams to have quick turnarounds, and the Bucs are just stuck in a mud rut.
You know, it's funny you mention that league, because I think it might have been 2 nights ago. My wife and I were watching, and I got to give it up for NFL Network, NFL Films. Of course, I made the speech for Ed Sable, and so proud to do it.
You should.
They do a fantastic job. On those shows. I said to my wife, wherever they have to go to interview somebody, they go.
Yeah.
They don't ask any questions or any quibbles. That's going to cost too much money. They do it. So I'm watching, and which one happens to come on? Doug Williams.
Oh, you didn't know that was on?
It's brand new.
Yeah, I DVR'd
it. So I watched it.
Yeah.
And very well done, of course, and the Bucks are a big part of it. And I said to my wife, when Williams moved on from the Bucks, he put a curse on them.
Yeah.
And they weren't worth a damn for 14 years until Dungy finally turned them around in his second season, which was 97. And my wife said, 14 years? They stunk? I said, 14 years. And Lee, I'm not saying every year they stunk. This is an 11-year cycle. This ain't kids play over here.
Without the
Cleveland Browns, this would be the number one.
Yeah.
And this is what Buck fans are having to deal with.
And it looks like they're going to have another losing season.
No wonder they're frustrated.
Yeah. Now, is it 11 or 12 years? Will this be the 11th year?
This will be the 11th playoff year.
Playoff less, yes.
Yes.
Which is worse? Now, we both mentioned how this league is built and set up for quick turnarounds for franchises. I don't think it was that way in the 90s and the 80s, or at least early 90s.
And you didn't have free agency. all the way back then.
Yes, that's correct. So which is actually worse? The fact that the Bucks, before free agency, before they were actually built for quick turnarounds, went 14 years without the playoffs, or the current drought where a team is built?
I think in a lot of ways it's the current.
I'm thinking the same way.
You know, they've gone through so many coaches, their share of general managers. There's talent on this roster.
Yes, there is.
It's not a talentless roster. They don't play winning football for the most part.
That was my biggest gripe with Mike Smith. I didn't expect them to be the 77 Steelers. But I saw the talent that was on the roster, and like, can't you play just respectable defense? Not the worst in 99 years, just respectable. Just once in a while get a stop, you know? And with all this talent, and that was my biggest gripe with Mike Smith.
You know, there's no Hargraves, there's no Justin Evans. There's no Conte. I mean, this is a bunch of...
Well, some fans think that's a positive.
I understand. You know? But it's a bunch of wild young dogs out there having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't... You know, Michael Thomas kills this team. I mean, he's a hell of a player.
Mm-hmm.
I looked it up because I had forgotten. I knew it was a big number. He caught 16 passes week one. 16!
Yeah.
And today, I believe it was 11. So, I mean, he's still on pace for 125.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
Well, here's one for you. I was doing research on this. You know, Kamara's only been in the league not quite 2 years yet. But up until today, he had 3 games where he caught 100 yards of passes, receiving yards, 100 yards. One of those was the Bucs. Of his top 5 games for reception yards, 3 came against the Bucs.
Look at you doing that kind of research over there, Lee.
So he just...
Very impressive.
Like Michael Thomas runs through the Bucs like nothing... Kamara did the same thing. Now, today they did a pretty good job on Kamara as far as running the ball.
Yes.
Darn good job.
You know, Lee, we have to hasten to mention that we're missing the third spoke of our wheel today, Mr. Stephen Isbitz. Our man Isbitz will be back, right, for the Thursday podcast.
Yes.
Which we'll probably do at $1 later this week.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, when you add it all up and you look back at what happened on Sunday, soggy Sunday...
Soggy Sunday.
How much credit do you give the visitors, and how much wrath do you reserve for the home team?
I give wrath to the offensive line. And again, I'm not one to rag on the offensive line. I don't use it as a whipping boy or a crutch. They were bad today. You know what? The only penalty that I know they didn't get flagged for was groping a cheerleader. That's the only one I don't know of. Everything else they got busted for. Everything else you could think of.
No credit due to the Saints?
Oh, all the credit in the world. They adjusted. They had fortitude. They didn't tank. They didn't throw in the towel. They didn't say, oh, woe is us. The Bucs got us again in Tampa in the rain. You know, they easily could have folded. Like, you know, they're a dome team. They went just to perfect conditions.
Lousy weather.
They were down by 2 scores at halftime. They were doing nothing on offense. No, they showed the character of a champion. I give them all the credit in the world, and like Adam Humphries told me, that they were disguising their defensive packages where it confused the Bucs, and they played right into the Saints' hands in a manner of speaking. I give the Saints all the credit in the world. I give the Bucs wrath for terrible special teams and lousy offense.
When we convene again, it'll be the 3 of us. Who knows? Could be at Hooters. You know, could very well be
That's
at
not
Hooters.
A problem.
Not a problem. We'll focus more on the remaining 3 games, what they have to play for, and what fans should expect other than possible regime change. And Lee, as reporters, and I know I speak for you about this, we don't look forward to being on call on January 3rd for what's going on at $1 Place.
No,
we like stability. We're not rooting against Dirk Cutter. Or Jason Light?
Not at all.
But 5-8 is 5-8, Lee.
Yeah.
And 5-11 is 5-11. And how many times does Dirk Cutter stand at the podium and say this statement? This is a bottom line league.
Yeah.
That might be his epitaph.
Yeah, and he always says a production league, too.
And a production,
it's a production league. They're not producing. Dirk, I think, has always been fair to me. I know at times he doesn't like some of my questions. I'm not the only person he snaps at once in a while. I get that. That doesn't bother me. It amuses me more than anything.
He doesn't make a lot of excuses. He never has. I respect that. He doesn't make excuses.
And you know what? When I've been wrong, he's been professional to pull me aside and not, you know, make a example of me. And he's like, Lee, you're wrong. He doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to do that at all, number one. Number two, a lot of guys would make an example of you in front of everybody. He's been professional, if not kind. I'll use the word kind because it's very kind of him to do that. He's corrected me on some things.
Sometimes he makes a compelling case.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I enjoy having a two-way street with a coach. I don't want to be wrong. I want to be right. Through the grapevine, I understood that I was wrong about something a couple of months ago. I was reached out through a third party that Cutter was saying, hey, Joe Bucks fan's wrong about something. And through this third party, I said, well, I'll change the story. I'll write a correction. Again, while we were going through third parties, and the third party went through Cutter, and Cutter said, no, I don't want you to change the story. I just want you to know you're wrong.
You know what? That's fair.
That's going above and beyond. That to me is helping someone out, and I appreciate that. And yeah, he's got to win. You know, we're talking about we don't want to see a coach leave. I want to see a guy like that succeed, a guy that treats me professionally, treats me honestly. He didn't have to do that, but he did, and I appreciate that. I don't want to see a guy like that fail, but it's a production league, and I can't sit here, and unfortunately, I cannot make a compelling case to keep Cutter for the 2019 season.
Lee,
much as I like him, much as I respect him.
Mr. DeKemper, there's only one thing left to say.
Goodbye.
On this compelling podcast. There's a couple of chicken tenders out there with your name on it, Mr. DeKemper. So we're saying sayonara.